Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Start managing your data, not your infrastructure. Unified, simple, secure. Welcome to Data Done Right. Only with the Pure Storage platform. Get started at purestorage.com.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and diets featuring up to 32 grams of protein.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Hartley, good afternoon, man. We have actual news for once. This is one of those episodes where it's like, oh, we're so bored. Like, some, we thought that was going to be the case. And then, like, right before we were going to record. Now, I don't know if this is huge news for everybody, but I think it is. And I think that this stuff is pretty important because we've been talking about the next generation of Apple CarPlay for forever. When did this get announced? 2022, right?
It was 23.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at least 2 to 3 years ago. Okay. We'll just put it at that. It's been a while. And it was at that, I remember that WWDC, and everyone was like, that's cool. When is that going to happen? I think it said later that year, and then just never happened. And we saw glimpses of like things kind of happen where like the maps and some other things were starting to bleed into the instrument cluster, but that's not really the next generation of CarPlay. But today we actually got a first official look. I think the Top Gear channel made an excellent video kind of going over everything. I'm also going to have a video, but like their video is really, really good and actually shows the hands-on of it. So definitely check out both if you can. But what happened basically is Apple announced CarPlay Ultra. This is the new name, which I think is pretty hilarious. But CarPlay Ultra, and they showcased every facet of what it can do. And it can do a lot like we were expecting. It can bleed into every part of the car's, you know, instrument cluster, the performance settings, like, you know, if you want to be in sport mode, or the handling and audio settings and all of that stuff can be controlled via CarPlay, basically. And it's launching today with Aston Martin vehicles, which if you are an Aston Martin driver, congratulations, you are doing very well, or you're irresponsible and bought a car you probably shouldn't have, which is what I would do. But yeah, that's gonna start rolling out, and you can actually get it put like on your vehicle via a software update if you already have a car, as long as it fits the next generation that they have, like their new infotainment system, which I'm not all too familiar with, so you'll have to look that up. But Hartley, what were your thoughts when this news kind of hit? I think you wrote some of the breaking articles there, so, you know, were you kind of surprised this just randomly dropped on a Thursday, mid-May, before WWDC?
I was surprised, and it feels like it's been so long coming. I think the most interesting thing is the way that Apple has stylized this as CarPlay Ultra, because, of course, this continues to exist alongside the standard version of CarPlay. Previously, Apple just worded this as the next-generation CarPlay experience, but that isn't very easy for ordinary consumers to understand. So I think it makes sense to call this something different. And so you understand whether your vehicle has Apple CarPlay or it has Apple CarPlay Ultra. And they are ultimately quite different experiences. The basic main display is quite similar. So you still have that row of app icons. And when you launch certain apps, they will basically look the same. But the difference here is the way that it can fully take over multiple displays in the vehicle, and the way that it actually integrates completely with the vehicle's functions. And there are all these additional features like widgets, which are very interesting because, of course, it's feeding that information directly from the iPhone. So if you've got a nice big center display, you can pin there the calendar widget, the weather widget, whatever you want from your iPhone. which is really incredibly useful.
Yeah, I mean, I like that it does remain familiar. Like you said, it's that main infotainment, you know, screen that you might have in the center of your car. But then if you have other screens, it starts to bleed into that. But also the main screen, if that's your only one, you can configure it to be, you know, way different than what it is. I really love the look of the iPhone style widgets that you can add. It looks really clean. I like that it's not like, in the pictures that we've seen and the video that we've seen, it kind of looks like the border around those widgets kind of disappears and it blends into the wallpaper to either be translucent. A lot of the examples that I've seen were more of just a plain black wallpaper, but it still looked really nice to have your calendar, the weather, who knows what other third-party widgets we may get, which is going to be amazing to see. I just think this is so much better than any of the stuff out there, for the most part, that other car manufacturers are putting out, because we know that it's not good. Like Mercedes, no offense, you opted out because you didn't want Apple to be controlling your infotainment and your driving settings and all of that. But the stuff that you make is not good looking. It's not I mean, it's functional, I'm sure, but it's not great design. It's not a great UI. And a lot of these other car, you know, manufacturers that don't put effort or emphasis into this, for some reason, don't want to adopt it. It's just mind-boggling to me. We saw that Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis, they're all one brand here, but they have three sub-brands. They're all opting into that. And then we had that list from a few years ago that includes Honda and Ford and, you know, some more affordable options out there. So don't worry, it's not just, you know, Land Rover and Aston Martin and all of these, you know, high-end luxury brands. But it's fantastic to see Aston Martin's putting its ego aside, knowing that, hey, there are other companies out there that can do a better job if these, you know, people want that. So why not offer that to them? And if you don't want this, you don't have to use it. You don't have to pair CarPlay with it. I'm sure there's a way to, you know, maybe, I don't know if you've seen this. Is there a way to just use normal CarPlay and not CarPlay Ultra? It'll be interesting to see how that works.
I don't think so. I think that really it's up to you how far you want to utilize it.
Sure.
And if you don't want to add those custom configurations, then you don't have to, and you can still use it for all of its most basic features. But I can't think there'll be many people that want to do that, simply because the, like you say, the actual infotainment system offered in many vehicles is not fantastic. And sometimes they're quite good, but they're just not as good as using an iPad, say, which is clearly so much more polished. And crucially, I think the reason why Apple CarPlay has been so popular and successful is because my music library is on my iPhone, my calendar is on my iPhone. And while in theory, you know, some car manufacturers like Porsche have been quite good at having a custom Apple Music app, Tesla also obviously has an Apple Music app, it doesn't quite go far enough in terms of, well, here are the widgets you're used to. Here is everything exactly as you've left it, set up on your iPhone, but now available on the display that you are using while you're driving, just ambiently. And so that really makes a dramatic difference. And that's what it really comes down to for me. The thing I'm most curious about is to see how this evolves across different displays, because the initial Aston Martin vehicles that this is supported in have a fairly basic driver's display and then an instrument cluster. So that is not anything particularly unusual with what we've seen over the past near to a decade now, I would say. But when Apple showed off these initial examples a couple of years ago, they showed how the next-gen CarPlay could take over the entire vehicle. If there was a 30-inch display in that car, Apple CarPlay can take up that full width and actually use that space usefully. So that will be really interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, in that Top Gear video, it's like a 20-minute video, but it's all about CarPlay and how it works with that Aston Martin. And it's fantastic, by the way. So again, go check it out if you want more visuals. But they showcased all of those different styles and screens. I'm pretty sure that was, I don't know if that's new. I can't remember if that was the new version that Apple might have released and they were able to use as press materials, or if that was from back when it was first announced, but it was a good refresher of like all of those different display types, vertical. There was one that looked exactly like a Tesla, which I was confused on. I'm like, which other, you know, manufacturer has that style display? I have not seen that, but I'm sure it exists. Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe Tesla's coming, who knows? But it looked exactly like the same size and aspect ratio of a Tesla like display there. And it looks like it's pretty highly customizable from the perspective of not only the actual owner, but the manufacturer. Like they can pick, and the developers that are working on that can pick how they want it to fit their car's displays and how it makes sense. Personally, in my car, and I think I've showed you this, and I know every time I show some people, they're like, it's not that bad, but I do not like my car's implementation of CarPlay because it's got a very unique style display. It's one of those like wraparounds. It's all one from the drivers and the like main infotainment system one, but it's like pointed and curved. I don't know how to describe it, but it's not a like actual rectangle. It kind of like kind of curves out. And so what Cadillac decided to do was put the rectangle that we get from CarPlay in this unique like shape that doesn't fit. And so it looks very strange and it doesn't take up the whole display. And I don't love that, but maybe, just maybe, if GM decides to pull back and say, okay, we will adopt more CarPlay because they're one of the ones that says, nah, we're just going to use Google in our cars instead. If they decide to reverse course, it'll be interesting to see if they can fix the way that looks and make it look better. Now, they are one of the cars that, weirdly enough, I don't understand GM, but some of their vehicles, even though they say we're not putting CarPlay in a lot of our newer cars, like I think it's mostly a lot of the EVs, although mine has it. My wife has a Chevy Traverse that's new that has CarPlay. It also bleeds into the instrument cluster and can do maps. It can do some of the extra stuff that not all cars can do. So I don't really know what these manufacturers are doing. Just adopt CarPlay Ultra at this point. Wouldn't you think that'd be so much easier? And then they can focus on the driving aspects, the more important parts.
I think so. But I think some of the anxiety around the next generation of CarPlay comes from the context in which it was announced. So things have moved on quite a lot in the world of Apple rumors over the past 2 years. But what we have to remember is that when this was initially shown off, we were expecting to have an announcement of the Apple car in the not too distant future. So manufacturers like Mercedes looked at this and thought, why would we allow this Trojan horse of Apple's ecosystem into our vehicle? Why would we allow our users, our customers, our drivers to get used to an Apple experience in their car, enjoy it so much that they don't want to leave it, and then they're just going to buy an Apple car?
Well, now they don't have to worry about that.
Now they don't have to worry about that, but I still think there is a level of concern about handing something over in the vehicle. Yeah. Because also manufacturers like to do things like paywall certain software features. And then there's the whole question of, well, if they devote a large amount of their resources to supporting the next generation CarPlay, what about Android users? And does Android need to develop an equivalent system? And then do automakers need to support both of those? And then what about when your phone runs out of battery and there is no phone in the vehicle or a situation like that? Well, then you need a fallback system. So suddenly they're developing for three different scenarios.
Well, I believe it's not. Well, that's the thing. So you do still have to develop something. And, you know, there's going to be people out there who are just going to buy the car and not know what CarPlay is and just use what's built into the car itself. So, I mean, it's not like they can't do that, because you're right, there has to be a fallback system. And in the Aston Martin, there is a fallback system. It's just whatever they built, you know, beforehand. It's not fully reliant on CarPlay. Because they even said in the video for Top Gear, like, you it's going to take a couple seconds to launch into that. So you're going to see your normal instrument cluster, but don't worry. And then eventually it's going to just immediately hop right in. I just think that it doesn't, I don't know that it makes sense to me personally. If consumers want this, if consumers are choosing to get vehicles that have this, then you're kind of missing out, unless you think you can make something that rivals it or is, you know, even better. And I'm not sure that that's an option right now. Like, I think Tesla can kind of do a good job navigating around this. Rivian is also pretty good at this, to where it's not the end of the world if you don't have CarPlay. They have some pretty good software and UI. A lot of the others just don't. So I think you're way out of this is to just implement it personally and move on. Add as much of that personalized stuff that you want. Aston Martin has logos and stuff still baked in, and you can do that if you want to. And I'm sure there's a way to figure out your paywall, which is BS, by the way. But BMW, you know, what is the, like, they have packages that you have to pay per month to get the steering wheel to have heat and your heated seats and all that. I am sure that there is a way that you will have to do that first through the BMW app or through the car itself. And then I'm sure that option can be added into CarPlay. There has to be a way to do that. So I'm not totally worried about that perspective, but you are right. There are intricacies that are, you know, a reason why this hasn't launched yet. And I think that what you said before about the Apple Car was a problem. And now that that's not an issue anymore right now, other car manufacturers are like, all right, cool, let's go ahead and do this then.
I agree with you. And from my perspective, as someone who's deeply enmeshed in the Apple ecosystem, I don't want to really use anything else. And I would actively pay more for a car that has CarPlay Ultra. I just think that automakers are in general very reluctant to hand over such an integral part of the experience, because they don't know what they may want to implement. That what if Apple turns around and says no eventually? What if an automaker wants to build a feature and CarPlay doesn't support it? Or they could get into situations that ultimately are unforeseen at the current time. So I understand the anxiety. I still think that they should go ahead and do it. But automakers are such huge companies, and this is ultimately something that you're going to use all the time in the vehicle. So there is a level of reluctance there. But at least with the standard version of CarPlay, customers very clearly prefer it. And when they don't have it, there is outrage, just like there has been with GM removing it from their electric models. So eventually, I think people will kind of vote with their wallet on this. And it wouldn't surprise me if we even see Mercedes go in this direction eventually. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if long term here, if this is really popular, if eventually Apple just offer the software, just actually offer a version of CarPlay that you don't need an iPhone for, that automakers can implement if they want to. Like a car OS style.
Oh, like Google, what is it? Android. Well, hold on, I just saw
this. Yeah, there's a version of Android which automakers can adopt and build directly in. I think that's what Polestar and Volvo.
It's called with feature. Google built in, yeah.
But that actually may be a more palatable option in the long term, especially if customers at the point of setting up their vehicle when they first receive it can choose, do I want the Google system or do I want the Apple system, which is very un-Apple-like to actually offer its software for another platform. But the fact is Apple has proven now, despite spending however many billions of dollars, it can't build a car. So it's probably a safe one for them to be able to do this with. And it's in the interest of automakers, because if there was a dedicated OS that Apple just updated every year, syncs with all of your other devices, you'd save a huge amount of expense in developing and maintaining that software yourself.
This is already, you know, kind of having a cascading effect too, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised if next week at Google I/O we see more stuff about Android Auto or with, you know, cars with Google built in, which is what my car runs. They already announced that Google Gemini is going to be added to that. And there's going to be more stuff kind of offered and going to be shown off next week. So I wonder if there's going to be something similar that Google's trying to work out with. They seem to have a better relation with all of these car manufacturers that want to choose like Google built in as their main operating system, which is strange. So maybe that is Apple's game plan. Also, if your car does have this or is going to get it relatively soon, You will need an iPhone 12 or later, and you need to be running iOS 18.5 or later, which just came out and doesn't really have anything of significance. I guess this is probably one of the most important things now that's on there alongside a couple of other things. But so yeah, that is the next generation of CarPlay. I did want to touch on a few other pieces of information that came out this week before, you know, WWDC in little less than a month now. We got some of the standard leaked features, or not leaked features, just announced features from Apple that aren't going to make its way into the event, mostly having to do with accessibility. And also there is a new rumor around a battery saving feature that's using Apple Intelligence to kind of figure out how you use your phone or how you've been using your phone over the last however many years, and what it can do to optimize battery, whether at certain times when you're not using it regularly, it can turn on specific device saving modes or whatever the case may be. I don't exactly know how this is all going to work, but this was designed with the iPhone 17 Air in mind. So we'll kind of touch on that and the S25 Edge, because I actually have one here now and I posted a video and was able to check it out. What do you want to start with? You want to start with the Edge?
Yeah, go ahead. What are your first impressions?
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cashback and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cashback sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cashback. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
It is weird, man, how light and like thin this device is. Here, let's see if I can put it in front of my face. There you go. It'll kind of blur my face out and you can see it. It is incredibly light. It feels kind of, you know, like when you get dummy units or you see dummy units at a store back in the day where they didn't run anything on there. They just had like a picture of what the operating system would look like. Do you have that out in the UK when you went to a store? Yeah, and you get those cheap ass dummy models that don't have anything on it. Yeah, it feels kind of like this is a fake phone. Like, it's unreal how light this is. And I just need to quickly say that when I comment about how light a phone is and how heavy a phone is, it doesn't mean that I am physically unable to carry a phone. Do you know how many comments I've gotten where it's like, you need to hit the gym, bro, if you can't lift the phone? Dude, obviously I can lift the phone. That's not the point of this. That is not what we're talking about. You know, you want to save, if you have pockets that maybe your pants, you put in your phone and it's like starting to sag down some shorts or whatever because of the weight and you have other things in your pocket, that's not comfortable. That you want to get as light of stuff in your pockets as possible. At least I do. I want my phone to not be super heavy if we can do that. But I also don't want it to sacrifice battery. So one of the main concerns of the iPhone 17 Air, which is why we brought up that battery saving feature, is, you know, how is the battery going to be when it's significantly less than the counterparts? And that's kind of the same for this S25 Edge. This is a 3900 milliamp hour battery when the Ultra is like 5000, I believe. So I don't know yet exactly how the battery is going to be. I just got the phone. I will be reporting on that later on. But like, I just think that this is a good step into hopefully fixing that. But I do think that the iPhone 17 Air, based on my impressions of the Edge, where it's going to be very similar, I do think these phones are going to sell pretty quickly once people go in and get their hands on it.
I'm very curious about how this actually pans out, because people seem to viciously disagree. Like you say, some people just don't get why you would even want a lighter phone. And there are always people out there that say, oh, I would have an iPhone that's an inch thick if it had a larger battery. There are always those people.
I'm okay with that, by the way. I'm okay with that.
But then there are people who I know, at least, who have found iPhones in recent years to be too big and too heavy. And while these devices are still pretty large, the reduction in weight and thickness does make them feel more portable. And so that makes a difference. So I'm interested in reality, how many people are we going to see walking around with iPhone 17 Airs?
Well, here's the thing. It's going to depend on marketing. So Samsung told me when I went out to New York to check it out, they specifically told me that they are adopting a new way to market this. And it has to do with getting your hand. They're highly encouraging people to go in and get your hands on it, take a look at it, hold it. And they're even doing it in a way that, like, when you go to the store, you know, these phones are tethered and they're plugged in. And they have stuff that are for security reasons, so you can't walk out with it. They are adopting a new way in, like, Best Buy, for example, how to do an untethered but, like, still secure way of getting your hands on this phone. So you can pick it up and hold it without wires and things attached to it that are going to weigh it down even more, because you want to get the full experience. And I think that's a really smart way. And so when you go to the Apple store, I wouldn't be surprised, or if they're not doing this, they should do this. When you go to the Apple store, they should offer you an experience where they're just giving you the phone in your hands. And this is, like, completely untethered. Here you go. Pick it up, take a look at it, do what you want to do with it, put it in your pocket, see how it feels, and go from there. And I think once people do that, they could be persuaded. The problem is the trade-offs, the camera. There's only one camera. Remember when we asked last week about who's using the ultra-wide and who's using the telephoto? Apparently, there are way more people out there that use the ultra-wide than I thought. Were you surprised by some of those comments that we saw? Because I was pretty shocked.
A little, yes. But I think that, based on everything we understand so far, the iPhone 17 Air should be relatively well positioned. I think that plenty of people will be happy to opt for that device, especially coming from an older iPhone, instead of going for one of the Pro models.
Well, here's the thing that scares me. It's the price. So did you see the price of the Samsung one?
Remind me.
It is in between the S25 Plus and the S25 Ultra. So it's $1,099. And for $100 or $200 less, you can get the S25 Plus, which has three cameras and is a little, honestly, it's not that much thicker, but it does weigh a lot more, in my opinion, at least from coming from each. There is definitely a difference, you can tell. But it doesn't appear visually to be that much thicker, in my opinion. It's kind of like your eyes playing tricks on you, to be honest. But it's got more cameras and pretty much offers the same experience. But you do get a better main camera. You get the 200-megapixel camera that's found on the Ultra as the main sensor for this one, which is not the case for the S25 Plus, but you get your telephoto lens. So it's like, which trade-offs are you going to do? And you can spend less money. I think that's kind of an interesting perspective now that we kind of talked about how the Air is supposed to be technically in between what, the 17 and the 17 Pro, yeah. But is it actually going to be that way in price? If it is, I think Apple will be fine.
As the Plus.
So $899, right?
Yeah.
I think Apple will be fine. But if they put it over 1,000 and do $1,099, that's what worries me, because Samsung did it. So they could just do the same thing.
I just said that, but there was actually a report this week about Apple considering increasing the price of the whole lineup.
Yeah, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they?
So if that's the case, maybe this will be the $1,000 iPhone and then the Pro model will begin at $1,100.
Yeah, I guess if you do... Yeah, that sucks, man. I don't know about that. You're getting a less, you know, one less camera, I guess. Apparently, a lot of people like that ultra wide. Also, somebody emailed me and it gave me a new perspective on things. So it's another question that I want to ask everyone: is this how you interact with your phone? Hartley, feel free to jump in also on this. Are you somebody who hits the 0.5x, the 1x, the 2x, the 5x? Or are you someone who just zooms in and out to those perspectives?
What do you think I am?
I'm going to say you're somebody who touches the buttons of each one.
Correct.
Okay. But the person that emailed me said that they just zoom in and out. And I said, I wouldn't recommend that because, yeah, because if you don't hit those ranges, there's a reason why they exist, by the way, if you didn't know this, which this person did not know that. So now they're like, oh, well, I never thought of that. So now I might actually do that. 0.5x, 1x, and 5x are the optical ranges for each lens, which means that's the optical quality. Anywhere in between 0.5 and 1, 2, which is actually just a zoom, a crop of the 1x sensor, anywhere in between 1 and 5 in that regards is a digital crop. So it's not quite optical quality. It's not the sharpest. Now, Apple will argue that that main sensor, the 2x, is just as good. And I have had no issues with it. But I personally would not recommend doing that, at least anywhere between 0.5 to 1 and 2 to 5, honestly. If I were you, I would not do that. But people do. So I find that interesting.
I completely agree. It doesn't make sense to me because you're taking an image that will actually be set in stone after you've taken it. You can't then zoom out any more than you may want to. Mm-hmm. When actually you could just take it with the camera as standard. And then if you want to afterward, digitally crop in the Photos app. And then you've captured everything that you may need. There's just no need to do that at the time.
And with the 48 megapixel camera, would you get the Pro RAW? Probably not, because it's not a Pro phone, right?
I don't remember now, actually, if all of the devices.
I don't think
Pro
they.
RAW.
I'm gonna guess not. I feel like this is something we should probably know, but I'm gonna guess not. Let's see, iPhone 16 Pro RAW feature. Let's see if you can do that. No, it seems like it's on the Pros only, which makes sense. You know, it's got the word Pro in it. That should be a feature that's reserved. I'm sure people will comment and tell us if we're wrong, but my gut instinct says that's for the Pros. If it did have that feature, however, that's even better because you can then set it to be a 48 megapixel RAW photo. You'll have more these photos are massive in file size, so I wouldn't recommend doing it all the time, but you'll have more crop ability basically to be able to zoom in and get the right position that you want after you take the photo, and you have more flexibility. But yeah, if you're somebody who does that zooming in and out and you're not landing on the numbers that are listed down below, I would stop doing that if I were you personally. I think the photos are going to be a lot better if you don't.
And also, there are supposedly going to be more of those options from this year. With the new telephoto camera, which is 48 megapixel, you will be able to crop in on that. So now that should, I believe, have a 7x throw, so it will zoom in closer. But because you can crop that, you can get a 3.5x. So the options on the Pro models will be 0.5, 1, 2, 3.5, and 7. Which is really all you need, because each of those, although two of those are sensor crops, they're not a digital crop. They're a sensor crop, which is slightly different. It should still have the same visual quality as if you were taking it with an actual lens, largely, to the average
person.
Yeah,
I mean, it won't be as drastic of a difference.
It's a 12 megapixel shot that is...
Yes.
If I was to take a picture with the iPhone as standard out of the box... with the wide angle lens, and I was to then afterwards zoom in to the same place that I would zoom to with the 2X, that would not be the same quality. Mm-hmm. Because both of those would be 12 megapixel images. So it still counts to use those intermediary lens options.
Now, this phone does have two lenses. It's got the wide, which is a 200 megapixel camera. It's very good. It's the same as the Ultra. We've done a test, so if you want to see what that looks like, it's basically my S25 Ultra versus the 16 Pro Max video, and just check out the main sensors. Anything else is not going to be the same, unless you see the Ultra Wide, which is on here. I personally would like telephoto, but you got Ultra Wide. But I was impressed with the cropping in. 10x digital zoom that I got on this was still very good. It definitely uses AI to kind of fill in what it thinks it's seeing for like text and stuff, and it makes it look really clear. I wonder if Apple's going to do that with its, you know, if it doesn't already, how it's going to manage its post image processing. And then, this whole battery thing is just going to be the icing on the cake. Like, how can Apple figure out a way to make the battery better, because it's going to be a struggle if it's not doing anything else to kind of get you in that perspective, especially with the displays being better and essentially going to offer ProMotion now. You're going to need help with this, in my opinion. What about this new AI feature are you confident in or not confident in when it comes to the battery for the Air?
It's an interesting idea, because right now low power mode does a relatively fixed number of things. So it reduces the number of active cores on the chip. If you have always on display, it will turn that off. If you have ProMotion, it will turn that off and drop you down to 60 hertz fixed. And I believe it reduces the energy usage of certain other components as well. I don't think the millimeter wave 5G operates as well on those devices. And on devices where it can do less, like the standard models, I believe it makes in the real world not a huge amount of difference. On the Pro models, it makes slightly more difference. But if Apple Intelligence is able to determine that you're just not using a particular part of the phone and can shut it off completely, then that should be more useful. Ultimately, I think it's questionable how much difference a software power-saving mode can really do. Because even if you disable Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, basically turn everything off and dim the display, there are still limits to how much battery you're really going to be able to save. The only thing that will really save battery if you need to is shutting the device off completely. So I'm a little bit skeptical about that. I don't know if that's a little bit of an Apple Intelligence gimmick, but we'll see. Maybe it will be great.
I think the C1 should help too, hopefully. Battery life on the 16E is pretty good, so I don't know.
They are trying to make changes with the iPhone 17 Air to accommodate more internal space. That's the reason why one of the cameras on the back has been removed, because that allows for a larger battery. Likewise, they have removed a speaker. So all the iPhones since, I think, the iPhone 7 have had stereo speakers with one in the earpiece and one at the bottom of the device. I believe they are removing the one at the bottom of the device completely. you will have one speaker, which is the earpiece. They are also removing the SIM card slot, which for the international market is massive, because most countries have not moved over to eSIM. China especially is not a big fan of eSIM, so this device will not probably be especially popular internationally. And there will be customers in Europe as well that will say, if it doesn't have a SIM card slot, I'm not interested in buying it. That will get better with time, and this device should help with that. But Apple is doing these things to create more internal space, to put a larger battery inside. And supposedly, this is also going to be a higher density battery. But the rumors are not overly encouraging. There have been some that have said it will be, quote unquote, on par with other iPhones. But there have been others that suggest that it will be actively worse compared to other iPhone models. And apparently, in Apple's internal testing, the iPhone 17 Air lasts a full day for 60 to 70% of users. The difference with main iPhones is that Apple hits an 80 to 90%, and that is what it usually aims for. So that is quite a significant reduction. And by all means, 60% of people that buy this device will still feel that it lasts them all day. But up to 40% won't. And that's larger than usual.
I also think a lot of the people that are going to buy this, maybe I'm wrong, who knows, but are like ones who maybe don't use their phones a whole lot. And so they're like, let's just get it as light and thin as possible so that throughout the day, it's not a hindrance in my pocket or, you know, wherever it is, and how, you know, when I'm carrying it around. And then when they are using it, they want it to be, of course, light and thin, just because it's just a better form factor. It is a nice form factor. I am not going to lie. You will like it. I feel you will like it. It does take a little bit of time getting used to it, because it is a little strange. You are used to these thicker slabs of glass and aluminum or titanium. And so it is kind of jarring at first, but in a nice way, in my opinion. I don't love the fact that, here's the other thing. People are also saying like, well, who cares? I'm just going to throw a case on it. Well, okay, you're still going to be significantly lighter and depending on the case that you put on it, you're still going to be significantly lighter and just better feeling than some of the other phones when you would throw a case on it. So there's no difference there, really. But the battery case that's kind of rumored to be with it seems a little weird, because that's definitely going to add some weight and bulk to it. I don't love that. I never liked the Apple battery cases.
That seems a little bit strange to me. But I think that the iPhone 17 Air overall is a well-positioned device based on everything that we understand about it, because it's fulfilling a really, I would say, three main purposes. The first of those, like we say, is to provide an option for a thinner, lighter iPhone for those who want it. And there definitely are people out there who are fed up with how heavy and large and thick and bulky a lot of iPhones have come to feel. So that's very good for those customers. The second reason, I would say, is to obviously replace the Air, to replace the Plus, which has been a notoriously unpopular device. And this is far more distinctive. It's more premium, and really should carve out its own space in the lineup. And the third reason, as we discussed last week, is that in miniaturizing its technology to fit in a chassis this small and to work out which design compromises Apple is willing to accept, the company is really laying the groundwork for the foldable iPhones that we are expecting in the coming years, with the first one being next year. So this is really a trial run for that. Apple has done this many times in the past. So, for example, something like spatial audio comes out as an Apple Music feature and on AirPods, but really that was developed primarily with the long-term view of getting it on the Vision Pro. So it does do that kind of thing. So overall, I really can't point to any faults in how they're positioning this. It's interesting that Samsung have just tried to beat them to the punch. I don't know how popular Samsung's version will be.
I don't know either. It'll be interesting to see who goes for it. I still think it's obviously not going to outsell the Ultra, in my opinion, or any of the other ones. But maybe. It's really hard to tell. I think that it will do well after like getting my hands on it and seeing how this could be appealing to people. But only time will tell. And I'll be interested to see how Apple's version kind of stands out from the rest. But would love to hear from everybody as usual. Let us know in the comments if you haven't already. And we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.